international detective dragons from outer space.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Anum5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 66. For this installment, the question to ponder was, aside from your senses, what sources of information and input help you form your reality, and how implicitly do you trust them? And in this installment, we'll hear from Dan, Ogre from the Stabbing Contest, Sarah, Fred Trellis, Ben of the Absolute Peach, and Kurt the Camera Guy from the Wandering Geek Podcast. I will not step boldly into the show this time. I will instead stumble drunkenly toward it, throwing up my arms to catch my balance and whacking it in the face accidentally. Back after this.
The Jolly Goons present a play entitled In Three Parts. Part one is entitled
I'll never forget that terrible sound, listeners. Perhaps you'd better hear it again. It started back in 1889.
It just occurred to me that there was a television show in the 50s or early 60s. I have no idea. I should have looked it up. Called Route 66. It's only just this moment that looking at the number of the show, and about to say, hey, this is the top of episode 66, welcome and hello everyone, I forgot that there's a song out there, Get Your Kicks on Route 66. I don't think I should be old enough to know that, because I don't think it... Well, whatever. Maybe afterwards I can splice something in here or someplace else. Just gonna have to go looking for it. I didn't think of it before. I'm sorry! Hi, everyone. Hello. Hello. It's episode 66 of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, and this is the top of the show where I blather for as little time as possible to try and not put off the good part of the show, which is listener feedback, emails, forum posts, that kind of thing. So let me get that out of the way and start with a welcome to the forums. Welcome, Ben of the Absolute Peach, an excellent podcast that makes me laugh like crazy. Ben and Joe, check out the Absolute Peach. And Fred Trellis. We heard from Fred as a new listener in the last episode, and very glad and happy to see Fred Trellis has joined the forums. Some of what he has posted there, actually probably all of what he has posted there at this point, as of this recording, is going to be read on the show that you're listening to right now. So welcome to you both. Thank you. Next on my list, because I do keep notes, otherwise I would just ramble here endlessly. Robert Salas does not live in a trailer park. Or maybe he does. To be completely honest with you, I have no idea whatsoever where Robert Salas lives. However, listening to episode 65, it sounded precisely that's what I was saying. When I referred to this guy lives in a trailer park, I was referring to the classic everyman from the medieval tale, only set in modern times. I wasn't referring to Robert Salas. For all I know, he lives in someplace other than a trailer park. I don't know. Should this matter? I just didn't want to throw in an accuracy there. I just didn't want to do that. That's gotten enough attention. I'm woefully behind in my podcast listening. Is that good or bad, I wonder? I think it's bad. And it's kind of confusing, too, because you'd think that in my current state of unemployment, which is still relatively fresh but getting old, and I'm not panicking yet, but anyway, you would think that I'd have all the time in the world that I want to listen to anything I want to listen to. Just a crap ton of time. Turns out the reverse is true. Because when I was working, I could listen to podcasts all day long. Most of the time. But I find that I can't read programming texts and get up to speed with PHP and CSS and Java. I can't do that while I'm listening to podcasts, which kind of sucks. But I'll get caught up. I think my point here is that if anyone has made mention of IDDFOS, please accept my apologies for not acknowledging you. No snubs intended here. I'm just behind schedule. So if you said hello or played the promo or anything like that and I missed it, sorry. I have something else too. Speaking of other podcasters, I have a request to make. I'm going to start getting into, not this particular episode, but in future episodes, I'm going to start getting more into playing other podcast promos again, because they've kind of gone by the wayside a little bit here. A lot of it has to do with me pushing myself up to the wire and not wanting to figure out where to fit them all in, and the other is that I can't find them. If you've got a promo, if you've got a 30-second or a 1-minute promo for your show, I highly recommend just making a simple little link on your homepage and labeling it, this is the promo for the show, some way or another, because it makes it so much easier to just grab the thing and stick it in the show. I mean, I'm not the only one that looks for that kind of content. You hear them on other shows once in a while, I'm sure. And I found out about so many other podcasts that I like to listen to simply because their bumper, their promo, their commercial, essentially, was played somewhere else. So it doesn't hurt, and it makes it really convenient for other podcasters to find. I'm making the request for myself specifically, of course. That was just me saying, I can't find the promos for podcasts that I don't have promos for. Pathetic anim. So what's going on this weekend? Dragon Con is going on this weekend. As a matter of fact, as of this recording, it started yesterday morning and it'll be going until Monday. Yep, started the 29th. I went looking for Dragon Con videos. I was hoping I could see the encaffeinated one. And I hope the encaffeinated one made it down there all right and is having an incredibly good time. The Parsec Award nominated encaffeinated one for the Weird Show. Lots of luck there. Have just a super time this weekend. And get home safe, too. We're looking at the possibility of maybe meeting up on his drive back at some point, but we shall see. As I speak now, Dragon Con should be hopefully permeating his being and filling him full of fun. What else? Who else is going? I wonder if Camera Guy, Kurt the Camera Guy, was going to go. I thought I heard something mentioned about that. He was going to try and make it, but he wasn't sure whether he was going to be in the area. Pretty sure George Robb is going to be there. He performs, or at least last Dragon Con he performed. George Robb, you remember, was our fine guest from Skype chat number 7. I think that's about it. I'm not gonna like drag this on and go crazy here, because there's plenty of email and listener response and feedback for episode 66. So I think it's in everyone's best interest for me to put a sock in it and step aside, let the break happen, and then get into it. And so we shall. Thanks for listening. Back in a bit.
It was the worst storm they'd ever known in the Dolomites. I, Lord Seagorn, daredevil fretwork champion, was lost with my servants on the side of a precipitous mountain in a horse-drawn motor car. Why have we stopped, O'Brien?
I think the horse must be tired, sir.
Why?
He's got his pajamas on, begone.
I think we're lost, mate.
Tut, tut, what a nuisance. Well, there's not for it, mate. We'll spend the night here. I'll sleep in the ditch, and you sleep standing up, holding an umbrella over me. Unroll my brass bedstead and erect my marble washstand. Abdul?
Oh, what do you want, Saburi?
Before I retire, prepare a light 16-course banquet.
I go and connect the gas stove up to the horse, Uri.
Mind you get the right end this time. William, lay out my evening dress.
Oh, sir, you wear an evening dress in this rain and mud, mate.
Yes, remember all of you. We are British. Together, hip hip.
Right.
Good.
What we have here now is an email. Actually, it's two emails, but I'm going to put them both together here. From Dan. Hey, Adam 5. Check the link below out. These crafty scientists seem to have taken your solar telephone pole idea a step further, i.e., solar roads. Like this idea, and figured you might too. And he includes a link to the article, which, of course, I will place in the Kudikatingatungatungs. Keep on potting. Peace. Dan. I checked the article out. It's solid, it's sound, and in many ways it makes a hell of a lot more sense than my telephone pole article because, well, the road is right down there on the ground. You don't need to pay anybody to climb a pole. Unless, of course, they somehow plan on making use of the telephone poles that usually run alongside roads, in which case you will have to get people to climb up poles. In many ways, it's like all solar energy ideas that make use of large areas of space. Accessible large surface areas. It makes sense. It'll work. And also, like most other solar energy ideas, the long-term payout is terrific. The upfront cost is enormous. I think this has become a universal roadblock, and always has been, for solar energy, in that initial outlay always seems to be this outrageous number that people in business balk at. They run away from it, screaming. You mean we can't realize a return on the investment after three quarters? Well, no, sorry. You have to think long term. I don't suppose the people with the amount of money necessary to get most solar projects underway are thinking long term. Doesn't seem to be a lot of long-term thinking going on lately, but that triggers an entirely different set of questions. So I just urge you to check out the article. There is another email here from Dan, and I'll just jump right into that. Hey, Adam 5. In addition to my last email, found another potentially very useful tech, re-solar roads, that being wireless electric transmission. See link. I see link. I will post link. I think Tesla had something like this working back in his day, but it never got mainstreamed. Thomas Edison must have needed to sell wire or something like that. Imagine a future where roads themselves power vehicles wirelessly using only the sun's rays for fuel. Sort of a real-life slot car future. Bring this on. Let me jump back a little bit. Thomas Edison and all those of his ilk, I think they were the kind of the Edisons, the Rockefellers, the Gettys, the Fords, the robber barons, as they called them, of their day, would take somebody like Trump and chew them up and spit them out. I'm going to need some feedback on this. I'm going to need somebody to correct me on this, but I think that one of the major undertakings of Thomas Edison and his investors was to ensure not so much that people like Tesla were paid attention to, but to ensure that alternating current was used instead of direct current. Because there was, for a time, if I'm remembering correctly, there was for a time the possibility of electricity being sent out from distribution stations via direct current instead of alternating current. And I think what that meant was they wouldn't be able to put a meter on it to charge people for it because they wouldn't be able to track it somehow. They wouldn't be able to, according to the technology of the time, they wouldn't be able to bill people according to how much electricity they used if direct current were used instead of alternating current. And they did some shockingly horrible things. Unless it's an urban legend. There is the story that in order to display just how dangerous direct current was, they electrocuted an elephant in a public demonstration. Now this is Adam 5 just taking one of those candy scoops and jamming it down into what he is pleased to call his mind and coming up with this story. I don't know whether it's true or not. I really don't. But I think that was the gist. And I forget who his direct competitor was who was pushing for direct current. I don't know. Was it Tesla? I don't think so. I think it was somebody else. Oh, too fuzzy. Didn't do the research. Didn't do my homework. But this article that he recommends, that he links to, is fascinating stuff because it doesn't deal with sending power radio through radio waves or microwaves or anything like that. It sends power through magnetic fields. And they were able to light up a light bulb or something with their apparatus, something like 3 feet away from the light bulb. Early stages, and they admit this themselves, very early stages of transmitted, close proximity transmitted electricity to run something. I think Dan has also dated himself by saying slot car. Real-life slot car future. That means that you are old enough to have seen slot car races. I recall that very thing. Entire shops, model shops with layouts on different tables of trains and, of course, slot car racing, where hobbyists could come and put their cars on the track and run races, those little electric tracks. Now, is that really, really old, or are places like that still functioning all over the place in the United States, and I just don't know it? Dan continues,
"It's like Bucky Fuller said, there is no energy crisis, only a crisis of ignorance. Peace on Mars, Dan."
Buckminster Fuller. Isn't there a substance? I don't know. I don't think it's an element. I don't think it's actually an element. Or is it? Buckminster Fullerene? Why didn't they just call it Fullerene? Why did they have to use his entire name? Buckminster Fullerene. I suppose you could be proud of that, having something named after your entire full name, although you might probably wince a little bit, do a kind of a quarter turn in your grave every time somebody brings up Buckyballs. Oh, this is all molecular physics stuff, and I shouldn't jump into that kind of thing, because then I would start exhibiting my own crisis of ignorance. I think in his day, in Buckminster Fuller's day, yeah, there was a crisis of ignorance. Now it isn't a crisis of ignorance. It's a crisis of information blackout, not suppression, just blackout. It doesn't make the news. And as a result, I think the real crisis today is a crisis of choice. People know there are alternatives. It's just not something that they can actually vote with their wallets on because, well, not everybody has the wherewithal to switch themselves over to non-fossil fuel powers. A lot of people do, but it's probably not going to get pushed in that direction unless we have $8 a gallon gasoline by the spring or maybe next summer. I guess we'll see. And there is another email, this also from Dan, and I'll jump right into that.
Hey, Adam, again with the Dan.
Again with the Dan.
Sorry to be harassing you, but I just listened to the Secrets episode, and I have sort of a weird personal plug to make. See the link below.
I'm going to include that link also. What is it a link to? It is a link to a music site that affords downloads of an album called Against All Flags. Let me read the email.
Head over to the Listen tab and scroll down to the tracks from Against All Flags release. This is what happens if you're an itinerant rock musician, listen to too much Art Bell, and have a complete disregard for copyright law. Now, as you might notice, this is really old stuff, 10 years since this page went live, but I've always been quite proud of it and the material therein. You might be missing the best part of the recording, Adam 5-wise, as the CD version of the record has an entire Power Records Star Trek episode hidden on it. Remember Power Records from your youth? Theater of the Mind type stuff for young nerds of the 1970s?
I'll be honest with you, Dan, no, I don't. I don't remember Power Records. I do remember being a young nerd of the 1970s. I do remember getting out the cassette recorder and tape recording off of Channel 11 the entire Star Trek episodes, the classic old series, and memorizing them, and being a very annoying little turd by repeating whole routines from different episodes, impersonating the characters as best I could by heart. This is what high school students, young freshman high school students, do to try and get punched in the face. But I don't remember Power Records. I do like preserving old audio from long ago, but I think if I actually had a cassette of myself doing anything like that, I'd probably burn it right now. Dan continues.
All that Art Bell stuff kind of lost its magic for me personally as the events of the Bush 2 administration really kicked in. Hot war and global empire dispelled most of the odd magic the hidden one held over for me.
I guess it got much less entertaining when it stopped being entertainment and became reality. See, folks, conspiracy theories usually have something to them. I doubt seriously that they're 100% true top to bottom, but they usually have something to them. Some uncomfortable question that really ought to be asked, and all the rest that's built on top of it is fanciful stuff and entertaining, but sometimes a bit of a stretch.
Anywho, feel free to use any of that Monuments of Leisure stuff on your show, and feel free not to if you don't think it's any good. Have rhinohide skin from decades of playing original music in bars, so no worries here. Peace, Dan.
Well, I'm going to, actually, make use of one of those tracks. Thank you very much. I'm going to play, in the next episode, episode 67, as closing music, the track entitled Fortress on the Moon. And I would recommend folks go ahead and check out that page through the link to Dan's music. It's not my particular favorite kind of music. I never really much listen to that, but I do know that there's talent behind that. I mean, it's very easily recognizable that Dan is a talented guy, and well worth your time to listen to, because I've often found that my taste in music runs the exact opposite of most other people's taste in music. Hopefully it won't prove true for Fortress on the Moon, but we won't be playing any of those tracks this particular episode. There is a CD that beat you to it, Under the Wire, and I'm going to be selecting a track from that. I also liked Problem Tourist a lot. Those two tracks, my favorite. Give them a listen, folks. And thank you. Thank you very much, Dan. I kind of look forward to hearing what people have to say about that one particular track I'm going to play, because it ties in. It ties into a lot of what's been going on around here at IDDFOS and what we've been talking about in general. So, good deal. Going to cut to a break. Back in a bit.
Next, hoist a small Union Jack and unveil a bust of Queen Victoria. Now, I'll just make a rough Englishman lost on the mountainside menu. Brown Windsor soup, meat, two veg, cabinet pudding boiled, and jam. Sir, make your mouth water.
Listen, Mike. There it is again, Mike. And again, Mike. That's your mistake, and it's gonna go. Again, mate.
I wonder what it is, mate.
It's a bell ringing, mate.
There you go, jumping to conclusions. We'll soon find out. O'Brien, strike one of my monogrammed matches. Look, a castle a mere 20 miles away. After it before it gets away.
Next up, we hear from Ogre of the Stabbing Contest. And Ogre writes,
Hi, Adam. So, I want to roll through a few topics I haven't had time to respond to during this busy summer. What would I put on every billboard on Earth at the same time? Probably something like, Everyone is lying to you, even this billboard.
Yeah. That has some eerie tie-ins to what's been going on lately at IDDFOS. So far as what we've been talking about, everyone is lying to you. Even this billboard. Far-fetched message? No, I don't think so, except for the fact about the billboard. The billboard might be right. Everyone is lying to you. Suppose you saw a billboard that said, disregard this message. I know that'd have me thinking a couple miles down the road. I know, it's running through all your heads, isn't it? What, Annam, what's running through all our heads? Now listen carefully to me, Norman. I am lying. Well, that didn't take me long. I just jumped right in and interrupted. Ogre continues.
What secrets would I like the answers to? I'd like to know why dolphins sometimes rescue humans from sharks. Do they just like us? Dislike sharks? Or is there some other motivating factor?
I don't know. I've heard stories that they do that a lot sometimes. I've also heard stories to the contrary. Not that they herd humans toward sharks, or that they provoke sharks and let them chase them in the vicinity of humans or things like that, but I suppose it would take a hell of a lot more research on my part. Does anyone have the answer to that? Anybody that's familiar with any kind of research that's been done in that direction? Just why do dolphins, or why has the legend sprung up that dolphins will rescue humans from sharks? If you do, write in. I'll check that out during the week in the meantime. Ogre continues.
And finally, the topic for this show. Assuming you get this on time, what other senses or stimuli inform my reality? Time. I am always aware of it, even if I'm not fully aware of its nature. Maybe I'm obsessed with time, or maybe that's just natural for someone who punches a time clock and stands up for a living.
And that from Ogre of the Stabbing Contest podcast. Folks, do yourself a favor, give yourself a treat, and listen to the Stabbing Contest. I recommended it before, and I recommend it now. You'll find its permanent link on the side of the homepage for IDDFOS. Thank you extremely much, Ogre. Time. Obsession with time. I love it when emails kind of do a little bit of a crossover, a little bit of a cross-wiring, a kind of a serendipitous, ethereal connection, not particularly having to do with the same thing, but we'll be coming back to obsession with time, listen for it, in another email. But something that's been mentioned on the show before, and probably talked about and dealt with in many other different venues aside from podcasting, and that is the elastic nature of time. The fact that you can spend a week in Acapulco or Aruba or the forests of Washington State, depending on what your vacation preference is. You can spend a week in any of those places and find that it has gone by in something like 2 or 3 days. Just zoop, gone, over. And that same technically, numerically, according to the calendar, that same amount of time punching that clock and standing up for a living can sometimes take 2, maybe 3 weeks. Because by the time you reach the end of it, really kind of does make sense. I wonder if there's a direct correlation between time and discomfort. Perception of time and discomfort, I should probably say. 30 seconds, just 30 seconds clicked off on a stopwatch of getting a back rub probably seems quite short. However, if you had somehow just managed to kneel down on a drywall screw and couldn't get up very quickly, 30 seconds would probably seem like 4 or 5 minutes. And those of you who have knelt on drywall screws know just how painful that can be. But I hadn't considered that. I hadn't actually considered that as a part of what, as part of the input that constructs what you view as the real world. That's very interesting. I left that completely out of the equation. But that's good. An open-ended question should produce unpredictable results. So thank you very much once again, Ogre, for writing in. Excellent. I think because I can, I'm going to. Going to what? Going to go to another break. Back in a bit.
Men, this is the place.
Thank heaven. My feet have been killing me.
They're not the only one they've been killing. Abdul, heist the French Union Jack. Now, let's see how we get into this castle. Ah, a door. O'Brien, lay out my knocking on door suit. Now, lift me up and I'll knock. Lift!
This door unlocked.
Next up, we hear from Sarah. And this, I believe, is a response to my panicky request to let us all in on what actually happened at the end of the picnic at Hanging Rock, the chapter that was missing. And thus she has. The subject line is
IDDFOS, The Secret of Hanging Rock.
And Sarah writes,
thanks for another awesome episode.
Thanks for listening.
Just a quick email to provide the answer to The Secret of Hanging Rock.
And she provided a Wikipedia link, which I went directly to straight away, and she has reproduced some of it here, which I'll go ahead and read.
While exploring Hanging Rock on a picnic trip, the girls experience several incomprehensible phenomena. Driven giddy by some supernatural suggestion of the monolith, they throw their corsets over the cliff, though they never fall to the bottom, and instead hang in space in an impossible fashion. The girls and Miss McGraw notice a mystical hole in space. Marion, Miranda, and Miss McGraw transform into lizard-like creatures and crawl into a hole in the rock, which another boulder then covers, leaving Irma alone and clawing at the fallen rock. Best of days, Sarah.
Thank you very much, Sarah. That was from a book, a synopsis, actually, of what actually happened from the material that was taken out of the picnic at Hanging Rock. The link in Wikipedia is to The Secret of Hanging Rock, which is a book that came out in 1987 that had the missing chapter released after the author's death, and the bulk of the book is other authors discussing those missing pages. Came out to about 6 pages. But this was another, this was an interesting aspect of it, which we link tenuously to Ogre's email. Symbolism and meaning.
Many readers interpret this to mean,
that is what we just heard, the lizard-like creatures crawling into the hole in the rock?
Many readers interpret this to mean that the girls have fallen into a time warp. This is compatible with Lindsay's fascination with clocks and time throughout Picnic at Hanging Rock. It also ties in with the tension between Aboriginal and English Australia that is clear throughout the book. The girls somehow succumbed to a magical yet natural Australia and were forever lost to their civilized schoolmates.
And I'm going to put a link to The Secret of Hanging Rock, published by HarperCollins in Australia. I don't know that it's going to be all that accessible, really. Perhaps it's for sale. I didn't go looking for it on Amazon yet. If I find a link to put to it, I'll go ahead and do that, just for completeness. But isn't that interesting? I don't think What's interesting, Adam? Well, I don't think it's possible for the Australian Aborigine and that entire culture on a continent that's been essentially untouched by what we laughingly refer to as the civilized nations, it's not possible for there to be a kind of a physical, genuine anachronism, as if one time, one portion of the timeline is overlapping another, where you've got pocket watches and cannons and gunpowder and machinery and mathematics, everything that the industrialized age had produced up to a point, coming smack up against the native Australians and their culture of simple survival on a continent that, for all appearances, is devoid of anything that would allow you to survive. Have to bring Pratchett in on this one. Those that have read most of Pratchett's stuff will know that I'm about to refer to The Last Continent. It is one of the Discworld Wizard novels, and I'm going to put a link to the Wikipedia entry for that because it gives a pretty good synopsis of what that's about. And time, and the overlap of time, and the clash between Aboriginal time and modern so-called civilized time is pointed up, along with lots of aspects of evolution and creation. And magic, of course, because he writes fantasy novels. I think of the Rincewind novels, this is probably the one that I enjoyed the most. This and Interesting Times. But I would highly recommend The Last Continent. Thank you. Thank you, Sarah, for... I wouldn't have known to look for the secret of Hanging Rock. I would have kept looking for Picnic at Hanging Rock and never finding the synopsis of the missing stuff. So thanks for letting us in on that. Now we know what happened. And if we care to find out more, there's a book out all about it. Excellent. Good deal. All right. I'm allowed to go to a break. I think I am. Can I go to a break?
You can do whatever you want. Go to a break.
All right, then. I'm going to go to a break. Back in a bit.
There, standing in the doorway, was a bag of dust in a nightshirt. Old wrinkled retainer. My retinue and I require kibble for the night. I'm willing to pay.
Min? I think he wants to go out.
Who wants to go out?
We don't know what it is, but when it wants to go, it screams.
Who are these men, Crump?
They're men, Min.
They're
staying the night.
Oh. What room are we going to put them in, Crump?
Oh, dear. Oh, they've gone. Where are you, sir?
Upstairs in bed!
Good night.
Now we have a return, thank goodness, of Fred Trellis with new input for IDDFOS. If anybody wants to, they can read the following on the forums because it is repeated there as well, which is great. But first here, the email, and Fred writes.
Topic for episode 66. Aside from your senses, what source of information or input help you form your reality, and how implicitly do you trust them? My sources of information are dull to describe. It used to be the radio, the good old anti-BBC. But now that I live in a country different from that of my birth, Germany and England, respectively, radio has been replaced with internet, and particularly podcasts. My iPod contains between 30 and 40 podcast streams, not all of which are listened to frequently. The most important in terms of cultural, political, and topical information are, in alphabetical order, IDDFOS, The Atheist Experience, The Bugle, The Geologic Podcast, The Nonprofits, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. I listen to these religiously. There are two further sources. Firstly, for lessons on living in the now and control...
Yes, I heard. I saw the word religiously. I wasn't going to say anything, because I know it was put there on purpose. And I grinned. I didn't just pass by the sign without looking at it.
There are two further sources. Firstly, for lessons on living in the now and controlling the rampant ego, my favorite source is Lucas Trellis, my dog. For all else not covered by the above sources, it is my wife. My wife gives me not just a new view on reality, but a view on a completely different, but oxymoronically, tangentially parallel reality. The disconnect comes from our complete incompatibility. She is French, I am English. She is female, I am male. I am sane, she is beautiful. Here is a small example. We have just returned, yesterday in fact, from a holiday in the south of France, a mere 12 hours' drive away. Just before our return, our car was broken into, and the Workshop on Wheels emergency service did not have the right replacement class. We decided to call in to a large town on our homeward route and make small pause to get the glass fitted in a larger workshop, and we arranged time, availability of correct glass, and an appointment in advance. I noticed that when I put my favorite podcasts in alphabetical order, that the only one that does not begin with the word "the" is IDDFOS. Might I suggest that in future you call it THE International Detective Dragons from Outer Space? Which will then clearly delineate it from any indefinite International Detective Dragons from Outer Space that may crop up. It will also ease my anal-retentive angst at having an odd man out in the list.
Afraid not, Fred. It's going to have to stay International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, if only so that it remains odd man out in the list. Odd man would be the operative term there. You hit on it yourself. But Fred continues.
So we had 2 hours to kill in a commercial-stroke-industrial estate in a largish town, during which we would be glazed by boredom and Autoglass Express. There was, we were told, a large supermarket with a cafe, just 5 minutes' walk away, and we decided to go there. Going there entailed crossing a busy dual carriageway, and we had a triangle of possible routes. Either the hypotenuseistically, I can say it, please don't ask me to spell it, direct and overall shortest route, or 200 yards adjacently to a pedestrian crossing, then turning at a right angle, oppositely to the main entrance.
I think, Fred, that the oddest part of this whole email is that one paragraph. Not odd because it in itself is difficult to understand, but because it isn't difficult to understand. I know precisely what you're talking about. I've got a bird's eye view of it in my head. And, you did spell it, hypotenuseistically. I think saying it is harder than spelling it. But Fred continues.
In short, we could cross here or walk 200 yards to a crossing. It was the rear window, and nothing was stolen, in case you were worrying about that. I think I may have invented the adverb hypotenuseistically, which I used earlier, but I hope the meaning was clear. To quote from Webster's, hypotenuseistically, of or pertaining to the longest side of a right-angled supermarket visit.
Anyone in doubt can go straight to Webster's and check that out. Incidentally, did you know that the word gullible is not in the Oxford English Dictionary? But I digress. Loyal listeners will know what that means and who gets credit for it in due time.
I was all ready to cross right here and now, but Mrs. Trellis wanted to walk to the crossing. This we did. We walked along the main road for 200 yards, or, since this was France, 182.88 meters. And crossed at the crossing. However, on our return from the shop, we had a similar, though opposite, dilemma. Should we go to the crossing and then make a left to walk along the road, or should we cut diagonally across the car park, directly toward our objective? Mrs. Trellis chose the direct route. The reason for the new choice is that the shortest and most expedient route from A to B is quite clearly the worst possible route to take when going from B to A. In Mrs. Trellis's non-Euclidean universe, direction is the most important determining factor of length. The supermarket was a casino géant. In IDDFOS 46, which I listened to yesterday during the 12-hour drive, along with several other IDDFOSs, you, Mr. Random 5, said that you found pronouncing French to be difficult. Géant, meaning giant, is pronounced géant, with the final T very unstressed, so quiet you might not hear it unless you concentrate. But nonetheless, it is there. Géant is a good approximation, and it was indeed a very large supermarket. The second part of your question was, how implicitly do you trust them? The answer being, I trust them all, 100%, 100% of the time. I trust my dog, because as far as I can determine, he has never lied to me. There is no evidence to the contrary. The podcasts I trust to 100% also, but I will check their quoted sources and links from time to time if I have the smallest doubt. The evidence has thus far always supported them. I trust my wife 100%, 100% of the time, in spite of the evidence, which clearly and consistently demonstrates that when we were engaged, my trust in her was misplaced. But now that we are married, it is misplaced. Best of days, Fred Trellis. Thank you very much once again, Fred. Excellent email, and as I said in the forums, this podcast just got richer. Superb input, very entertaining. Love this kind of stuff. Hypotenuseistically. We would refer to it, I think, as cattywampus. The point that we want to get to from this corner to that opposite corner is cattywampus. That actually is in the Oxford English Dictionary. Okay. Great. Thank you very much, Fred Trellis. Hope we hear more from you again. And it's time now, I think, to go to another break. So that's what we're going to do. Back in a bit.
Good evening, Kron. We have fresh visitors there.
Dr. Long Dongle. You're home early tonight, sir.
Yes, Kron. I watched her dance again tonight. Oh, how she danced. She danced like spots before the eyes.
He's talking about Senorita La Tigernutters. Every night he goes to the Kathy Filthmuck to watch her dance.
Yes, Kron. 3 years ago, she said, Dr. Long Dongle, the day you can give me 50 pairs of castanets, I'll marry you. Well, I got 48 pairs.
Oh, naughty man. Then, Dr. Long Dongle, you only want 2 more pairs, eh, buddy?
Yes, buddy. Just 2. Oh. I nearly got them tonight, but just failed. Kron!
Yeah?
Take my skull-cutting mallet and teeth-catching bucket. How sweet. The children are awake.
This next up, what we have is from the forums, from a newly joined member Ben of the Absolute Peach. And Ben writes, I just got done listening to episode 65. Since I'm listening from both ends of the IDDFOS chronological spectrum. Boy, that's got to be weird. That's got to be really weird. I am now on he continues. I am now at episode 2 and episode 64. An odd way of doing things, perhaps, but then again, maybe this slightly abstract way of listening is appropriate for a show which itself strides so boldly into the unknown. Can't argue with that. If anything, it's a superb experiment in finding out whether any of it is going to make any kind of sense at all.
do let us know.
Or maybe I'm talking nonsense.
Or maybe you're not.
Either way, I enjoyed this episode very much, despite the...
Now I can't even remember which episode he's talking about. Oh, no. All right, what did he start with? I just got done listening. All right, 65. Catch up, Adam. Come on. Pay attention.
Either way, I enjoyed this episode very much, despite the fact that I found I had to re-listen to certain sections several times before I was sure everything had made it into my pea brain.
Well, I don't know about pea brain. I certainly got in line first when they were handing out pea brains. So even if you had one, which I kind of doubt, I wouldn't be able to tell.
This was probably because I listen at work and while riding my bike, where there are unwanted but necessary distractions. Therefore, it took me quite some time to get through the full 2 hours of the show.
Yes, 65 was one of the long ones.
The subject of UFOs and related phenomena has always been one of my most keen interests. But this was the first time in a long while that I have heard another person pry the subject with such tangible enthusiasm and yet such level-headedness.
I fooled you. Actually, I'm quite glad to hear that. I'm really quite glad to hear that. If I was getting anything across, Just read, Adam.
I enjoy the way you often counter your ponderings by setting up what you just said and questioning its credibility. It helps a certain type of listener, who may also get carried away on a given topic, to rein in their own wonderings and consider what it is they allow themselves to believe.
That's a key phrase there. What do you allow yourself to believe? And in a way, that really kind of, not in a way, in a direct and absolute positive link to the question for this episode, it ties completely in.
I found that listening to this show made me stop and think about where exactly I stand on the subject, and furthermore, upon what I base the beliefs I do have. When and if I ever figure this out, I will be sure to let you know. I become more and more impressed the more I listen to IDDFOS. I'm very glad our paths crossed. Ben.
Same here. I get a superb sense of relaxation and well-being and an incredible stress relief when I listen to The Absolute Peach. Wish I could accomplish that with my show. But there is another entry that I missed, actually, when it was first posted. I think the two were posted on the same day in the same board, and I mistook a new thing. Whatever. I missed this one. I didn't read it until just recently. It also is a forum post, and it's by Ben, and it reads thusly.
I decided to go right back to the beginning of IDDFOS to find out where it all began. I know, I'm miles behind.
Well, there's a good side and a bad side to that. Bad side, obviously, is there's just so much material to go through, which, honestly, I don't know. I could sit here and say, oh, don't listen to all of it, don't listen to all that other stuff. When you get to the Don Juan and Hell thing, unless you really feel like a play being read out loud, it's two whole episodes, an hour each of a play being read out loud. I think you could probably give that a miss, unless you're particularly interested in George Bernard Shaw. Maybe you want to skip those, I don't know. I think it's 10 and 11. Yeah, that's the bad side. The good side is, well, you don't have to wait 2 weeks, or a week, or 3 weeks for a new show to come out, if you're interested in hearing another one. I think I just played Captain Obvious. Allow me to salute. I have just saluted. I'll now continue with Ben's forum posting.
I'm listening to Transmission 1 at the moment, and just had to stop to flag this up. Quote, any listeners that are particularly talented and have a little bit of time on their hands, if you haven't seen the product Urine Gone, this is the first IDDFOS contest. Design the packaging for the product Urine Gone. The winner of the contest wins. That's about all I can promise. I laughed out loud. Superb.
Well, thank you. Good. I think I grabbed that and stuck that in my promo, too, because it kind of stood out by itself. Don't know why, but it's in there. It's in one of those promos. I've got two promos on my homepage.
I also quite like the fact that you're driving around while recording. I can hear you turning corners and indicating, and then you go and take a break because you've arrived at your destination, really enjoying it so far.
Thank you very much, Ben. I'm glad to hear that you're having a good time with it and that it's worth listening to. If it provides some kind of entertainment and, you know, gets you thinking about stuff, then Good. Excellent. And you'll find, well, actually, you've already found, because you're corralling them from one end to the other, bouncing back and forth, which really is kind of interesting. Very strange. I wonder what it's going to be like. I wonder where the middle is from this point. I mean, which episode constitutes the middle of the body of work, as it were. But yeah, I had a pattern when I first started out and first began podcasting that I would do it every week on Thursday night and do it with my little portable digital recorder on the way to do the shopping, because, and they kind of fell as natural breaks in the conversation. Don't do that anymore, but cool. All right, excellent. So those were forum entries by Ben of the Absolute Peach, new member of the forums. Thank you very much, Ben. Folks, give Ben and Joe a listen at theabsolutepeach.com. You'll find their link on the IDDFOS homepage. Listen to two or three shows. If you haven't at least spent the whole time smiling while you're listening, if not laughing out loud, then check your pulse. Okay, gonna go to a break. Because we can. It's very empowering and liberating to be able to say, I'm going to a break, and then to actually do it without rambling on and continuing in an endless...
It's little green wretch. He needs changing. See, now what did I change him for last time? Bannister.
Yes?
A moment of quiet meditation. Play me a gramophone record.
Right.
Oh, Crumb, they don't write tunes like that anymore.
Okay, late breaking development for episode 66, this just in from the forums, and I wanted to include it mainly to supplement the post that Ben made, I don't remember when. This is from Fred Trellis, a response to Ben's post on the forum, and Fred writes,
"There is an ironic poignancy to this post, which is very keen for me, but totally unknown to anyone else. The words of Anim 5 on UFOs also clarified my position. Bang my head against the hardware, and then I'll take it more seriously. 60 years is long enough. If you have nothing convincing yet, then don't expect me to be convinced. Come up with the concrete, compelling evidence. Or let's all move on and do something more productive with our fantasy, energy, and wish fulfillment. What is needed is physical evidence, not more testimony or outlandish tales, but tangible proof. Objects, artifacts, bodies are needed. Otherwise, our energies are better directed elsewhere. Briefly, in that crude phrase, solid evidence or get off the pot. I did YouTube research on UFOs. Some videos are truly beguiling, but rationally unconvincing. UFO believers wear PJs under their on-backward jeans, I suspect. My peripherally related bête noir, as it were, is the Philadelphia experiment. I reread the book every 5 years or so, and whilst knowing it is nonsense, it nevertheless intrigues me. Best regards, Fred."
And I did post a reply to this, but basically the gist of that was, yes, bang my head against the hardware, and I'll take it more seriously, but it is actually the lack of hardware that keeps me on the fence and keeps me from climbing down on the side of the folks that totally accept a reality in which aliens and UFOs exist. However, the part that keeps me from climbing down off of the fence into the reality where they can't possibly exist and they're just entertainment are the accounts of the really compelling cases. And we can get into further detail on that in the open-ended series, a work in progress that will explore this far more thoroughly. Just wanted to include that post from Fred. And now I think what we're going to do is we're going to move on to a just-in, under-the-wire, late-breaking email from Kurt, the camera guy. Haven't heard from Kurt in a while, and it's more than understandable considering the kind of schedule he's had to deal with lately. And so now, from Kurt.
Hi, Adam. I apologize for my extended absence from the show. It's been a very, the polite word would be, interesting summer, and I haven't had the time I would like to chime in on your topics and give them the consideration they deserve. However, I now find myself in the position of either giving brief replies to your queries or monopolizing the entirety of their show with them. Considering my still limited time and not wanting to cause you the loss of any listeners, I'll try to be brief. No guarantees, but let's give it a go. I'll be going from the most recent topic backwards, and feel free to interrupt at any time in true IDD FOS fashion. I didn't shamelessly rip that off, do a pale imitation of that style on my show, just for the heck of it. It's good stuff.
All right, fair enough. Kurt continues.
On the topic of UFOs, I'll keep most of it to myself until the round table you mentioned comes out, but I have a few quick thoughts on it. If you simply go by the numbers, there are just way too many planets circling stars in galaxies beyond counting to think that we are the only thinking beings in the universe. And it's entirely possible that those folks have space travel. So it would not surprise me in the least if some of them showed up at some point. I'm just not convinced they have yet. I recall reading a theory some years back that the governments of the Western democracies had knowledge of extraterrestrial beings and were using sci-fi TV shows and movies as a means of getting the masses used to the idea of life from outer space. If this is the case, they're doing a pretty good job, since an Associated Press survey a while back showed more people aged 18 to 34 believe in UFOs than believe they will ever see a Social Security check. Oh, one more quick thing on UFOs. Why do they have to be from other planets? What about sliding in from other dimensions, just a bit off from ours? Which could explain the lack of evidence if they couldn't exist in our reality without the propulsion that got them here in the first place. Or even ourselves from the future, on some sort of historic fact-finding mission. Just a thought.
Yeah, both those alternative theories have been put forward by a number of people. Very interesting. At this point, every bit as plausible as anything else people can come up with. So long as it remains in the realm of fantasy, we can theorize till the cows come home about where such beings or craft would come from. There is another alternative theory that they have co-evolved or have evolved long, long before the human race came about and have been on Earth since a couple of 100,000 years ago, 300,000 or 400,000 years ago, or longer, and that they've just been hiding in places that we can't get to, like the bottom of the ocean, things like that. Lots of wild and wacky speculation on that.
As for what secret I would want revealed to me, I can only think of one question I want the answer to. Since I know that no human on Earth actually knows the answer, I don't know if it's the type of secret you were looking for, but here goes. Where and how did it all begin? And by that I don't mean Western civilization or humanity or even life on Earth. I mean where and how did the universe begin? It's the only question that I have burning in me that I would want an answer to that, in the grand scheme of things, matters. All the historical stuff would be interesting, but would hardly change my world view. If I go with the scientific explanation, you have the Big Bang Theory and its variation, the recycling universe. Both are plausible to a point, but where did all the stuff come from to blow up into our universe in the first place? And if this universe replaced another one, well, where did that one come from? The theological side doesn't help much either. If God made the heavens and the earth, where'd he get the stuff to make it out of? And where did he come from? who created the Creator? I guess I'm not going to discover the answers to this one. Good luck with your UFOs and JFK.
You absolutely have to say one thing about Kurt the Camera Guy. He never aims low. He always aims high. He's never looking for the easy prize. He's always reaching. I don't think you could get more basic and mysterious than that, nor more profound. I can't even put a spin on that ball. I can maybe, like, huff on it and polish it a little bit and say, suppose you did have the absolute correct answer, even as a human being, whatever that answer is, would you be able to prove it?
Billboards. The original question is a little hazy, but I recall everyone sending in three lines. I don't recall if they had to all appear on the same billboards or if it was a set of three that appeared all over the world at the same time. I think mine would work either way. First, you are far more powerful than you know. Second, strive to be better than you. Third, listen to the Wandering Geek podcast. Kidding.
Hey, why not? All over the earth? All right, you'd crash your servers, of course, but, sorry.
Third, sometimes what is easy is not best, and vice versa.
Not bad. Very affirmative, very empowering, positive messages. Slick.
My message to our post-apocalyptic progeny would be something to the effect of, if you are listening to this message as anything other than an art history or science field trip, that means our civilization is no longer here. I'm sorry. It appears we mucked things up rather badly. If there are any histories remaining, please try to learn from our mistakes. If not, freedom is good. Servitude to the state, not so much. Good luck.
That also is pretty damn good.
There are two things that I believe as fact but cannot prove. First, I believe that there is inherent good and evil in the world. I know many people will argue against that until the day they die, but I've seen too much of both where they shouldn't exist to believe it isn't true. And second, I believe that one's frame of mind and attitude can actually affect the world around them, to the point of changing probabilities of certain things happening. It's not as pat as that book that came out a few years ago, but in gamer terms, it can give you a bonus to your roll. But the positive person can still roll a 1 and blow it, or the negative person can make that 20 despite themselves. And finally, if I were to have the educational magic wand for a day, I would do the following in an attempt to give our kids the schools they need. 1. Make every school a choice school. Give as many parents as possible the ability to decide where their children would be taught. The budgets of those schools would be determined by the number of students they could attract, thereby rewarding those schools that actually teach our children and starving those that do not. 2. School will still be mandatory, so I would create a central school in each district where the destructive and or dangerous children would be sent. Part boot camp, part scared straight, and part down to basics. We would try to educate these kids in the basic modern survival skills, but at the very least, we would be improving the educational opportunities of the other 95% of the students. 3. Go through the administrative offices and ask everyone in that massive building what they do to directly educate students. If they have no answer, they are gone. I realize this is a slight oversimplification. We do need facilities and food service folks, but Milwaukee, like most urban districts, is hopelessly top-heavy, having nearly as many administrators as faculty in the district. We could cut administration by 25 to 50%, and the students themselves would never notice, except for the improved classroom items we could then afford. I could go on and on for that one, but I'll leave it at that in an attempt to be brief. Ouch, too late. Epic fail on that score from the looks of it. Oh well, I've taken enough of your time for one show. Keep them coming. I promise I'm listening even if you don't hear from me all the time. All the best, Kurt.
Thank you very much, Kurt. Yeah, one hell of a busy summer. The Wandering Geek podcast and all the work that you put into it, not to mention Gen Con, the Annie Awards, and other stuff that's been going on that people can listen to the Wandering Geek podcast to find out about. Thanks for catching us up and giving your input on a whole range of shows. I'll tell you, one of the things that I always found a little bit frustrating about education in this country, and that's the fact that textbooks cost so damn much. I'm really wondering if it's absolutely necessary to have this hardbound text, have this hardbound officially sanctioned by the school that you're going to, particularly in higher education, some chemistry text that could cost $220. That's insane. Absolutely insane. Today, it should be a PDF where you can print whatever chapter you need, whatever chapter the professor decides he or she is going to cover. Sometimes they just go through, you know, we're going to do 3, 11, 9, and then in your other text we'll do just those four chapters in that other textbook. They don't even use it the whole damn book. I don't know. I like the idea of culling the bureaucracy of a top-heavy school system. But I also like the idea of somehow, some way or other, trying to lure competent, intelligent, and inspired teachers away from the private sector by actually making salaries more attractive, by actually paying the best and hopefully getting what you pay for. All right. Excellent. All right. We're going to go to... thank you. Thank you very much, Kurt the Camera Guy. Folks, go over and check the 2008 Any Award nominee podcast, the Wandering Geek podcast, at www.wanderinggeek.info. Yes, .info. Remember that. Or go to the permanent link on the IDDFOS homepage. Great to hear from Kurt the Camera Guy again. Listen also for the closing music for this episode, 66, coming from an album by none other than Kurt the Camera Guy. Oh, yes. He wasn't kidding when he said it's been a busy summer. All right, we're going to cut to a break, and when we come back, it will be old-time radio time. I got to come up with a better intro than that. Back in a bit.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the proof. This is Ripley. Believe it or not.
Married men in the Akela tribe in Africa always cut their meat into small chunks with a knife held between their toes because before their wedding, they were required to knock out all their own teeth, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the man who bit a crocodile.
We present Part 3, Midnight in the castle.
You asleep, mate?
Of course we are. You don't think we make this noise when we're awake, do you? O'Brien, lay out my waking up suit.
Hello. There's something under the bed, mate.
Thank heaven for that!
It's been moving about, mate.
I don't believe it, mate.
Shh! Listen.
Come when you're alone, boy. Under the bed.
You singing of music. Before me stood a ragged idiot dressed in a grass skirt, water wings, and a perforated bronze trilby.
There you are, naughty little Eccles.
Lord, Dr. Lingle Dongler.
getting out of bed after I tucked you in and battered you unconscious for the night.
There have been many stories told about an instance when a man bites a dog. However, I don't think you'll hear many about a man who bites a crocodile. When this man named Hannock was seized by a huge crocodile while swimming in the Kafue River in northern Rhodesia, he decided to bite back. He clamped his teeth on the tip of the reptile's tail, forcing the crocodile to release him and retreat into deep water. Although Hannock himself had been severely bitten, he recovered in the hospital at Lusaka, believe it or not.
Okay, normally at this time in the show, I present a snippet of an old-time radio show and offer the entirety of it available through the kudikatingatongatongs for the episode. In this case, sure, I'll offer the entirety of it available. Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'll put a link to a place where you can get, I think, all of them, or a great many of them anyway. This is from the Story Lady. It's only a minute long. It's hardly worth just putting one-minute show up as an old-time radio offering. But in this case, I'm going to put a link to where you can get a whole bunch of them. This one is called The Emperor's New Clothes. Hope you enjoy.
And now, boys and girls, it's time for another trip through make-believe land with the Story Lady.
There once was an emperor who thought of nothing but new clothes. One day, a tailor told the emperor that he could make beautiful clothes for him that stupid people would not be able to see. The tailor then collected a bunch of money and only pretended to make clothes for the emperor. When the make-believe clothes were finished, the emperor put them on and paraded through the city. And everybody pretended that they could see the clothes, except for one person, Hugh Hefner, who asked the emperor to be the playmate of the month, which he agreed to and enjoyed very much, except for the staples in his tummy, which hurt a lot.
Thank you, Story Lady. Next time, boys and girls, the Story Lady will tell us how to check and raise when playing stud poker.
Yep. The Story Lady, starring Joan Gerber, who had a 40-year career as a voiceover actress. Also included is Byron Kane, who I think is the male narrator's voice, or one of the other characters, I'm not sure, or both. Yes, The Emperor's New Clothes. Lots of things tying in. Lots of things tying into the show. Part also of what ties in, as I should state now, before it becomes too late. The bed music, the background music beneath my brief ramblings for this episode is A Circle of Hidden Intentions. That's the album name, A Circle of Hidden Intentions by Greg Williams, available at magnatune.com. Will there be long ramblings for this particular episode? No, I don't think so. Incidentally, if you hear an occasional tap or scratch, that's the dog, Mushkin, the one that has absolutely, completely, and thoroughly recovered from her operation, and has now resumed the role of, I own the house, why aren't you doing precisely whatever it is I want you to do whenever I want you to do it instantly? Just to continue a little bit in comment on the forum post that Ben wrote, I was very glad to hear that I came across at least as a little bit balanced on the subject. So far as the UFO question goes, I'm not going to be rambling in this particular episode about it, but I'm glad I came off sounding balanced and not unbalanced, even though it's a topic that throws me off balance. You'll hear a whole heck of a lot more about it in something called the Open-Ended Series, something that deals with a topic, and an inexhaustible topic that could have multiple productions or shows or audio offerings connected with it. One of them is almost already in the can, but you'll be hearing about that when it comes out, and I'll have quite a bit more to say about it in that, along with a special guest that I discuss it with. But thank you very much, Ben. I think when I first started musing about this, about having a kind of a panel discussion or even a one-on-one discussion with a couple of different people. Ben actually is one of the folks I mentioned, and hopefully we can arrange an open-ended series that's, if not with Ben and the Encavenated One, then Ben on his own, and we'll just continue delving into it. Because it is that extensive and broad a topic. But what about the question for 66? What about this "what forms your reality" thing? Well, it grew directly out of the idea that when you're dealing with things that are left off the popular radar, things that are marginalized, ideas that are almost ghettoized because they're either unprovable or unpopular or both, then there's always the possibility that a great many things go on, not necessarily behind your back, because they're usually elsewhere. As a matter of fact, they're almost always elsewhere, far off. And if someone doesn't report them to you, if someone doesn't bring them to your attention or mention that some event happened or something exists, then it's never going to become a part of your reality, a part of your world, a part of your view of how things actually are. It got me thinking about just how do you build what your worldview is? How do you construct it? How firm a foundation does anybody have aside from what they go about in their daily routines? I think I put forth the idea in a far earlier IDDFOS that you can look at the human population of the world as 6 billion people, or 6.5 billion views of the world, or 6.5 billion realities as being perceived by people to a greater or lesser extent capable of perceiving whatever it is reaches them in terms of input. Whether it's just their five senses from day to day, when they wake up to when they go to bed, or their five senses in addition to gossip, stories, tales, opinions from the other people that they come in contact with, or their five senses and all that gossip plus whatever media is available to them. In what we like to refer to as the developed nations, there's almost too much input. And sadly, too much of that input is devoted entirely to the task of getting money from you. So if the media, and when I say media, I mean radio, television, and newspapers. You could even throw in the internet, because it's becoming something merged into the others. When I say media, that's what I'm referring to. It should be understood, doesn't necessarily fulfill the function that you would expect it to. That is, giving you an accurate picture of the way things really are, giving you that periscope view of the world, the very narrow glass tube of the television, somehow charged with providing you with all you need to know, or as much as you need to know, about what's really important day to day, week to week, and year after year. There she goes. What are you doing in there, Daddy? Why are you not paying attention to me? Where was I going with that? If it's fueled by the motivation of making money, then it can't tell you the truth. It has to lie to you. At the very best, it has to leave out a great deal of what actually is important and what actually is true. So essentially, I guess what I'm asking, or wondering, is if my view of reality, as formed simply by the act of getting up every day and going to work and coming home, I mean, if that were just it, if there were no media input whatsoever, I think it'd be a very, very small, very small world, very tiny, myopic view of what the world is about or what it is. But I'm wondering if, because of all the other inputs from commercials and talk shows and television — I don't watch a lot of television, not anymore, But occasionally, the morning news, when we're trying to find out what the weather's going to be like and whether we should bother getting on the road or not, if that view of the world is in any way accurate, and in any way something that I can trust as being true or real. I think in addition to this topic, if you'd care to comment on this for episode 67, I would say go right ahead and do so. But in addition to this topic, the question for episode 67 would have to be, how often, when you're reading the newspaper, listening to the radio, or watching television, how often do you believe you're being lied to? And when was the last time you actually said to yourself, I was just lied to? Somebody just told me a story or left out a very important fact, whether it's in a newspaper or on the radio or most likely on television, including commercials. All right, not a lot of rambling this time. Not a whole lot of rambling, not a whole lot to say about this just yet. Because I've got a few more things I want to look into so far as this goes. And I'd be interested to hear more on this topic from you guys, what you have to say. So we're going to go to the end music now, the closing music, which is going to be from an album put out by Kurt the Camera Guy, a CD that he was kind enough to send to me and many other folks that have helped him out and supported him over the course of the year with Wandering Geek. And the album title is Geeks on Vacation, and this is going to be track 15, Short Bow and Long Rapier. If you've heard this played on his show, then you'll know just how good it is. If you haven't heard it yet, you're in for a treat. Check it out.
Welcome to the Wandering Geek Inn. What can I get for you, fine gentlemen?
I beg your pardon. What was that?
What do you want? Oh, you just had to ask it like that, didn't you?
Oh, here we go.
Where'd those minstrels come from? Hey, get off of that table. Relax and enjoy the show.
May as well kick back for 3 minutes.
I want a girl who likes delving dungeons. I want a girl who fights for her pay. I want a girl with high hard boots and a torch that burns to light the way. I want a girl in a chainmail bikini who's fast and agile and quick to attack. She's playing with her daggers. She's polishing up her helm. She's clearing the doorways and covering my back. I want a girl with a short bow and a long rapier. I want a girl who fights two-handed.
Fights two-handed.
I want a girl who bad guys dread.
Bad guys dread.
I want a girl with an indomitable spirit.
What he
who
said
uses a machete to cut through undead. With magic
hey.
Sword that thirsts for justice.
Oh.
And a ring that
hey.
Protects her from the cold.
Oh.
She is fast
hey.
And agile and quick to attack.
Oh.
She's clearing the
hey.
Doorways and covering my back. I want a girl with a short bow and a long, long rapier. I want a girl with lightning reflexes.
Lightning reflexes.
I want a girl with stunning
blows.
A tournament we will meet accidentally.
Accidentally.
We'll start to talk when she borrows my bow. She wants a horse with chainmail barding. She wants a horse that'll get her there. She's changing her name from Allie to Arwen. She's covering our escape after robbing the evil Baron. I want a girl with a short bow and a long rapier.
Hey, who let that goblin in here? Oh, no, you don't.
Like I was saying, what would you gentlemen like to drink? Well, since you put it that way, dark ales for everyone. We found the wizard's treasure.
Excellent stuff. Good filk. Nice to have good filk every once in a while. Something that belongs on those long lists of audio categorization where you get the drop-down list and it asks you, well, what is it? Is it funk, punk, rock, blues, spoken word? You know, that long list where they come up with every known type of music, so they think. They don't have filk on there. Why not? They should. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kurt the Camera Guy. Short bow, long rapier. And so we have reached the end of episode 66. I'd very much like to thank again Dan. Check out Dan's the link to Dan's music. I'm going to repeat that link in the next episode because I'm very likely, as closing music for episode 67, going to play one of the tracks from Against All Flags. Thanks very much, Dan, for writing in. Thank you very much, Ogre, from the Stabbing Contest, for your email. Thank you, Sarah, for clearing up the Picnic at Hanging Rock mystery. Thank you, Fred Trellis, not only for your email, but for a new Scrabble word, hypotenuseistically. And thanks very much for the forum entry, Ben of the Absolute Peach. Thanks also to Kurt the Camera Guy. I'm glad I was able to get your email in because it covered a lot of territory. All those topics, I'm glad you got to them. I'm glad you finally got a minute to yourself at least to be able to write in. Cut yourself some slack there, guy, and take a breather. It's been busy enough, I would think. And finally, I have to thank you for listening. Thank you very much. I hope you'll join us for episode 67. That, of course, will be the episode in which I explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.